and only the Rich Eisen Show.
Now Stroud hanging in, throws it to the near side, picked up.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
One mistake on national television just blows it all up. But, like, it's cool. I just keep growing and keep learning, man.
The Rich Eisen Show.
What can you tell in preseason? What you see in preseason is everything.
Today's guests. Senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Author and CNN host, Jake Tapper. Co-host of Good Morning Football, Jason McCourty. And now... it's Rich Eisen.
Hey, yes it is. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Live on the Roku channel. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. I'm sitting here at the desk on Sirius XM Odyssey. And, of course, this Rich Eisen Show, terrestrial radio affiliate, smart enough to have us. We've got NFL preseason football in the bank from last night. And we have, hold on a minute, let me get this right. I think I know it off the top of my head, but I just want to be accurate. I don't just say things into this microphone. Six games tonight. Six of them. Six preseason games tonight. Six on Saturday. Two on Sunday. As a goat once said, LFJ. Football's back. Albert Breer is about to call us in about 18 minutes' time. He was in Gillette last night watching Houston versus New England. He's not missing up a chance to watch C.J. Stroud play football, and he can actually get a press pass for it and go ahead and expense things to Sports Illustrated watching C.J. Stroud. Jason McCourty of Good Morning Football, along with Devin McCourty, had a Twins cast last night of that game. That was He'll join us in hour number three.
That was great.
And then in hour number two, Jake Tapper of CNN, one of my good friends, the anchor of The Lead with Jake Tapper, and the author, I don't know how he has time to do this, quite frankly, of All the Demons Are Here. He's joining us in the middle of this program. What's more likely in the middle of this program as well? So much going on. We got Phil news everywhere. Mickelson, Rivers, what the hell's going on? If your name's Phil, you ever have your head on a swivel. Your name's in a headline. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial.
On.
Good to see you over there, Chris Brockman. How are you?
Rich, poopy butt. Shout out my son, Cage. And I'm just wondering when I can get my Malik Cunningham jersey.
What was that?
He wanted me to say poopy butt.
Good to see you, DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts. What's going on?
I don't have poopy butt, but good morning, Rich.
TJ Jefferson, don't say those words, please. You already heard it twice.
I won't, but so good to see Phil you. McGraw, Phil Jackson.
There you go.
Philip Lamar, they should
I like
have
it.
Their heads on the swivel.
I like it. Okay.
Malik Cunningham, when can I get that jersey?
I was about to say, I mean, look, it's not, this is the beauty of National Football League preseason action. You know, everybody thinks that they have a shot to win the Super Bowl. And there's a new Hall of Famer in New England. His name is Malik Cunningham. Congratulations. You got yourself a winner right there.
Thanks, Rich.
As long as he's going against a bunch of guys who aren't going to be playing in the NFL, it's going to be great.
I texted a high-level analyst friend of ours who may frequent this show often, and I wrote, Malik Cunningham should be the backup. He wrote, preseason, stop. He's playing against bartenders and truck drivers.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. The disrespect is real.
Disrespect is real.
But you know what, though?
I'm excited.
Here's what he's doing. He's trying to get a gig with the New England Patriots come heck or high water. He's playing wide receiver, too. He's doing two things. And so, I mean, do your job. There's just more you
Absolutely.
Can do.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure the Patriots are looking at him and fans of the Patriots are looking at him and saying, that sure looks better than everything else we saw tonight. You know, yep. And Mac Jones suited up. God bless him.
Does that guy love football or what?
He loves football, but I just, again, these are the observations I have. So you come out of this saying the Patriots offense stinks and so does C.J. Stroud. You take a look at what the Vikings and the Seahawks did last night on NFL Network. And honestly, you got to get these kids reps. People have to break sweats. They got to get back in the swing of things. Play calling is not easy to do when it's the first time for a bunch of players receiving the play and cadence and things of that nature. It looks easy to us. We're just getting ready for our fantasy football drafts and getting upset about, you know, our positioning in that and trying to look at what players might be available and where, you know. Meanwhile, the rest of the National Football League is going about their business. But congratulations, Chris, where there is sometimes no hope. Come some undrafted kid out of Louisville. Just lighten it up.
Just a little bit of glitter.
Running in a touchdown in the fourth quarter. Only touchdown of the night for the New England Patriots. But the thing is, like, why can't the Patriots just, you know, let Mac Jones
cook?
No, not cook. just it's like he suits up and then doesn't play in a preseason game. Like, he actually suited up.
Well, he was never going to play, as ESPN
said.
Right,
no, so put a headset
day.
On him and let him call plays and have fun like everybody else does with their starting quarterbacks.
No. Nope.
That's not them, huh?
Kirk Cousins.
No bucket hats, no Gilligan hats in Denver, no headsets.
Kirk had no pads but had a helmet on. What's the point of
impressive.
That?
Impressive.
That's even stupider.
This is impressive.
Not having full pads and knowing you're not going to play.
Not only having the helmet was strapped tight. It wasn't just like it was like, no. He had it strapped up, Rich.
But to bring it all full circle, it's like a 3.5-year-old. I'm sure Cage had his helmet on last night and was running around the house.
He was ready to go.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, that's...
But he also not playing.
It's just great to see. It's great to see. It's very exciting. And you know, honestly, I don't know what to glean out of any of that.
Not a lot.
You're just breaking sweats and getting it going. And it's interesting. It was good to see Bill O'Brien back on a sideline and...
Bill earholing officials.
Let me get into it. Let me do it. Because it is preseason for the officials too.
Yeah.
But great midseason. They're in midseason form last night. There was a roughing the passer penalty on the second series of CJ Stroud's second and final series of CJ Stroud's night last night. Patriots got called for it. Third and long. I mean, it's perfect. It wasn't like a first down or a second down. It's a third down. Patriots getting off the field. They completed their mission on defense. No, like roughing the passer. And then you look at the replay and it's just like, okay, the left arm of the defender did make contact with the helmet, but it wasn't swung hard. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the way he got the quarterback down. It was incidental contact on an otherwise excellent defensive play. Out comes the flag, and it's just like, can we just please not do this anymore?
Yeah.
Not do this anymore.
I can't do another season.
And it was a perfect mid-season call, and I'm sure the league would push back and say an arm made contact with the helmet, and it's just like there's no common sense. And I'll just say it again, please. Please use replay. Use it. You've got it. They no doubt have the ability while they're just, when flag is thrown, go and huddle up with your fellow officials.
Yep.
You know, talk about honestly. No, not even this. Not even it. You can talk the play out maybe. Do the full on Bull Durham. Like, talk about candlesticks and wedding registries. Make it look like you're talking about the play while they're looking at the actual play and getting in your ear and saying, pick the flag up. Again, these plays don't happen on first and 10. It's always third and, you know, and long and bailing teams out. I feel like it literally took six snaps for me to snap sitting on my couch. I was in midseason form. So, speaking of what's old is new again. What did I tell you coming back from the combine of my top rumors?
That Tom Brady was going to come back?
That was the number one.
He's thinking about it.
Or keep an eye on it.
Keep an eye. Keep an ear.
All right. We're still keeping eyes out, and he's Instagramming out cats and zebras.
Amazing, you know? Safari.
Remarkable.
Daughter. Jeez.
And then earlier on in the winter, his new cat.
That's great. Oh, that's right, yeah.
Remember that?
Cat dead.
Cats in the winter, zebras in the summer.
He's owning Vegas
Living
teams.
The life.
Yeah, baby. Another one was Philip Rivers being contacted.
Mm.
Right? And I guess Philly Riv said something on a podcast that he was going to play for the 49ers in the Super Bowl if they had made it.
Like what?
I'm telling you, I heard that Philip Rivers was in the mix last year. And the Niners and Kyle Shanahan, God bless, he confirmed it. He confirmed it. I think we have that soundbite. Roll it.
He was prepared to. Yeah, now, the stuff we talked about throughout the whole year, you know, we would have had to see how that was for the Super Bowl, but that was the plan most of the year. It would have been.
It would have been.
The whole year.
So here's the thing. Because the story, it makes it sound like during the middle of the NFC Championship game, Kyle Shanahan had an epiphany. If we get out of this alive somehow, if we come back on these Eagles with Josh Johnson, or we come back on these Eagles with Christian McCaffrey doing Wildcat stuff, Brock Purdy, okay? If we somehow get out of this alive, Phillip Rivers, we got to call him down in Alabama. And somebody called him during the game, say, hey, Phil, if we get out of this alive, hey, are you up for it?
Loosen up.
But this was, again, Trey Lance goes and gets carted off. Jimmy Garoppolo does his thing. And the backup to Jimmy Garoppolo is a kid who's the last pick in the draft. The entire time, they were probably calling up Alabama, talking to the high school coach, Phillip, saying, hey, Phil, how you feeling? You want to stay healthy? You want to stay in this mix? Let's keep having a conversation. Because if Jimmy goes down, we got to start this kid. We love him, but we got to start this kid. Maybe we need you. And as you know, Phillip is one of those guys. He's not just going to leave his high school team in the lurch. He's got to finish that season, which meant like December. And they were talking to him. And then Purdy started winning games. And they're like, all right, let's run with this plan. That's what this sounds like to me. And the interesting thing is, you might be sitting here going, really? They reach out to Phillip Rivers and throw him in a game that is the most important game of the year, like the Super Bowl? Like, really? Well, their reasoning behind having Phillip there in case of emergency, you break the Phillip Rivers glass, proved out in the NFC Championship game, did it not? Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
When you were watching that when you're watching that NFC Championship game and you're seeing Josh Johnson get lit up and you're seeing
poor guy
Christian McCaffrey running offensive plays from the Benny Friedman era, okay? And you're, by the way, he's an old school.
Quick look up Benny.
Benny Friedman is a Pro Football Hall of Famer, who was one of the creators of the modern pass. And he went to the University of Michigan.
Oh.
Don't you know?
Born in 1905. Nice reference.
Yes.
Benny.
Running plays from those old school days. And then let's see if Purdy with one arm can come in there and noodle a pass every now and then. Do you think they could have used Phillip Rivers in that game? Phillip Rivers, having not played in a long time. Phillip Rivers, who, as we saw in his final game as a Colt, needing to throw a Hail Mary, needed an actual legit Hail Mary to be answered for the ball to reach the end zone. Would you have chosen that Phillip Rivers in that instance over what they needed in the NFC Championship game?
Yes.
Hell yes. Uh-huh. You would have?
Yes. Would they have beaten the Cowboys?
And again, just the latest example. I'll just say this too, and I'm sure they're not the only team to think this way, but they are. This is their MO. Latest example of how there are no wrong answers. Only good questions. Hey, do you think Phillip, you think we need Phillip? Like the minute Lance went down. It could have been maybe even in training camp. I don't know. I'd love to know when the genesis, the germ was planted of let's keep Phillip on the hook here. And the latest example of, you know, let's keep thinking outside of the box for the San Francisco 49ers. Let's get Brock Purdy ready. Let's play Brock Purdy. Let's start Brock Purdy again. Okay, let's get Sam Darnold. Let's get him ready. Let's keep Trey Lance. Let's see what he can do. Last year, it was Trey Lance's start and come heck or high water. Now, this time, it's like, let's keep Trey Lance because you never know when you might need him. And who knows? Maybe he takes them to the Super Bowl anyway because this team can win it. It's just, I love this story. It just fascinates me completely. That would have been incredible. Phillip Rivers would have been one of the greatest interviews in the history of Super Bowl Media Night. He would have had more people around his podium than maybe Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Old man Rivers coming out of retirement, high school coach. I mean, that is that's a movie.
Yeah, that's a Disney.
You know,
movie
put yeah, you're right. Take your headset off, coach. Come on in, play in the Super Bowl, wing it around,
win
and
MVP.
Beat Patrick Mahomes.
God, that would have been amazing,
dude.
That would have been incredible.
You imagine if that had happened?
I really can't.
And again, it would have happened for sure. That Rivers would have been there, not that he would have beaten Mahomes, but would have been there had the Niners somehow gotten out of Philadelphia alive on that day. And I think had they beaten Philly, had somehow, some way, I believe it was Hassan Reddick who blew it up.
Destroyed.
And hit Purdy in the arm that changed the entire game. There it is. Because if I'm not mistaken, Purdy, I think, did he have Ayuk open? He had somebody open.
I think it might have been a touchdown, too.
Right.
If he hits him.
And instead, Reddick got there in the nick of time and more than nicked up Purdy. That if, I'll go full Debo here, had Purdy stayed healthy, Niners win, Philip would have been signed for the Super Bowl. Because Jimmy G wasn't going to go. You know Jimmy G wasn't going to go. They had to delay a press conference in Vegas because Jimmy G's health was in question when he signed a contract with his new team. Because his foot required surgery. Philip would have been in the Super Bowl, man. And his dodgummits and all of that stuff. Getting out there and getting in the face and, you know, he would have found Jay Cutler somewhere, I'm sure. Even though Jay wasn't anywhere in Arizona. I love that story. It's so fascinating to me. Latest example. Niners are always thinking outside the box. B, you never know.
You never do.
844-204-RICH. Number to dial on this program. Let's take a break. Albert Breer will be joining us after watching last night's preseason opener in New England and getting us ready for the rest of the weekend. Who's playing? Who's not? Jordan Love getting it going for sure for Green Bay, it looks like. Let's talk to Breer about all of this good stuff from Sports Illustrated next. Let's talk about AG1, people, a new partner of the Rich Eisen Show, a daily foundational nutritional supplement that helps support whole body health. And if you're like me, then it's so hard to keep up with a supplement routine throughout your busy day when it comes with a bunch of products on top of it. So when you drink AG1, you notice an overall feeling of health. It can help support your mental clarity, improve digestion, focus. Drink it in the morning. Drink it in the afternoon, before working out in the morning, before making your coffee, starting your day. Makes you feel unstoppable, ready to take on the day and anything that comes your way. If you want help taking ownership of your health, and of course you do, try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/Eisen. That's drinkag1.com/Eisen. Take ownership of your health right now. Check it out. drinkag1.com/Eisen.
Are you currently enjoying the show on the Stitcher app? Then you need to know Stitcher is going away on August 29th. Yep, going away, as in kaput, gone, dead. Rest in peace, Stitcher, and thanks for 15 years of service to the podcast community. So switch to another podcast app and follow this show there. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Just want to get personal for a second here. You know, it took me a while hosting this show to know, and Susie kept on hammering at me saying, you know, sometimes you have to put yourself out there and, you know, book your own guests if you need, or, you know, ask things of people, a favor to come on and do stuff. And it was tough to figure that out. And part of the reason why I didn't put myself out there is when you ask for something and the person doesn't come through for you, it really puts you in a bind. Like, how do you handle something like that? Like, for instance, if you ask somebody to shoot a video for you and they don't, it might call in a question, say the friendship bracelet they made you at 2 a.m. with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh.
And we asked Andrew Whitworth, when you go to the Taylor Swift finale here in Los Angeles on Wednesday night, will you shoot a video of you screaming out lyrics on a selfie? Because that's what all NFL players do. We've seen Aiden Hutchinson did it. We saw Aaron Rodgers do it. And if you're for an NFL person becoming a Swiftie, you need to do that video. He said he would do it. And he did. Thank goodness. Oh, he's not.
He sort of doesn't know the words.
That's fine.
It's kind of
watermelon in it through. Yeah.
It's
fine.
The thought that counts. Hey,
absolutely.
His kids are his. You know, again, I asked him what he would sing. He said, "Cool summer." I had to say, "It's cruel summer." You know, he's still learning how to become a Swiftie, but the kids are enjoying it, and so is Whit. And he tagged us in everything as promised. He's a man of his word. He's a Walter Payton man of his word.
That's funny.
Well done, Whit. See, I still got your friendship bracelet on, too. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network with the Roku channel live stream all at once. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Of course, he's going to use whatever he can do professionally to go see C.J. Stroud play a football game. Of course, he's going to get a press pass. So when I heard Albert's like, I'm on my way to Gillette to go watch C.J. Stroud's premiere, I'm like, of course he is. And he's joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Albert? How you doing?
It was too easy for me. It was right down the street. I'm not saying I would have traveled for it, but might have been poor form if I hadn't shown up with it right down the street.
You would have paid Sports Illustrated to do this last night. It's one of those moments, right, for you, Albert?
No comment.
It's one of those moments for you.
And yeah, It was a little rough. Wasn't. I don't think it's what we're going to see out of C.J. Stroud long term. But
of course,
you know, it's a good example of what these preseason games have become, and you know, sort of the risk that you take. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, Bill Belichick didn't put Mac Jones out there. You know, and I think part of it is they only had, I believe, one left, and whether that guy's a starter is debatable. And it was the same with C.J. Stroud. Both the starting tackles weren't there. Their veteran starting guard wasn't there. They had two starters that were in the lineup on the offensive line, and one of them's a rookie, you know, and she was Scruggs out of Penn State. So I think, you know, you sort of, you know, expect some of this. And, you know, I don't think it's a mistake that D'Amico Ryan's got him out of there pretty quickly. But
yeah, and I'm with you, Albert.
Not a lot to chew on there.
Of course. Yeah. Of course, I'm with you. And plus, you know, he at least learned to find his Michigan man first in Nico Collins. So he's got that for him. But in all seriousness, though, he can't put on a Texans helmet and uniform and play a game for the Texans for the first time at Baltimore in week one. Like, going against Belichick without starting tackles and without, it is kind of like throwing him in a very deep end of the pool and learning how to swim. He handled it. I think he handled it very well after the game too. I mean, you got to do it. This is what, when you're drafting second overall quarterback, this is what you got to do. End of story. And then they won the game, which has got to feel good about, you know, the entire unit getting on a plane to fly back home. So I get you. Totally. That's the way it works. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be interesting to see the way it goes with all the rookie quarterbacks. Because I do know, you know, this really goes back to 2008 when Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco had all the success that they had as rookies, where even like, not even about, like, what's best for those guys, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, I was having an interesting conversation with Matt LaFleur about sitting Jordan Love. And, you know, he said to me, I said, you feel good about the decision to sit him for 3 years then? And his answer to me was, I think every quarterback could use this. He's like, because it's so hard out there. for rookies to succeed. And a lot of these guys get into situations, get thrown in situations where they're on bad teams. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case with the three guys this year, but they lose confidence.
Do you want to put him on hold there?
Working hard to get that confidence back.
Are you there? Are you there, Albert? You're cutting in and out. I don't know if you're in that part. If you're in that part of Massachusetts, that's a problem. I don't know.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. So yeah. So you just mentioned how you spoke to Matt LaFleur about sitting Jordan Love, and that was a no brainer, right? I mean, so and Aaron Rodgers winning two MVPs. While you're sitting your quarterback and waiting is exactly the type of stuff that you'd like to do. And the question is what about Jordan Love now? And you're hearing the Bengals in their practices just loving Jordan Love and seeing what they saw out of him and having no problem praising him. What do you expect out of this weekend with Jordan Love, Albert?
Well, when I asked Matt about it, I said to him, I'm like, so you want him to see more. And that was the big thing was, like, because he hasn't been in games, like, there's still experiences that he has to go through. And so I thought logically when I was talking to Matt about it, logically, okay, like, then wouldn't it make sense to kind of try to check as many of those boxes as you can in the preseason games? And his answer to me was, yes, but we have to balance that against who else we're putting out there, which starters are going to be out there. So you want to be able to protect him, and there's the injury risk. And then, he said the other part of it was, like, let's see how the joint practices go. And I think that that's sort of the piece of preseason that people, a lot of the more casual fans might miss, is, like, a big reason why you're seeing fewer and fewer starters in the games is because you're seeing more and more joint practices. And a lot of coaches feel like we can get the work we would get in the preseason games and joint practices. And if we can get good work there in a controlled environment where the quarterbacks aren't getting hit, where, we can, generate the situations we want to see, well, then the preseason games become even less necessary. And so, I know going into this, Matt was I know his intention was to kind of go on feel here. And, if he felt like they got enough good work in the joint practices with the Bengals, maybe they would scale back what they would do with him in the game. So I think that's a decision he was planning on taking right up to today, and trying to figure out whether or not, it was really necessary to get a ton of work for Jordan out there or just get his feet wet a little bit.
So what's the general sense about him? I mean, you want to talk about a quarterback of the moment. It certainly is him. What's the general sense that you're hearing about Jordan Love?
It's a big we'll see. I think everybody's aware of where the bar is in Green Bay, and when you have 30 years of quarterback stability with two Hall of Famers, I think it's obvious what's going to be expected by the general public there and what it's going to be like living, in that fishbowl if you're Jordan Love. And, I think that's why, like, one of the things that both he and LaFleur said to me that was so interesting was, like, what Aaron Rodgers' text to Jordan was right before camp, was be yourself. And, the way Jordan took that was, I got to go run my own race. And I got to go play the way I know I can play. I got to, just go out there and run the offense and do what's being asked of me and not try to, live up to this impossible standard that's been set over the last 30 years. And yeah, you want to get there, but the key is being able to do what he's been groomed to do, what he's been taught to do, what he's sat the last 3 years to do. And so I'd expect, like, that at least early on, Matt LaFleur is going to lean on his defense and his run game, and that's still a talented team. And I think Jordan Love's going to be the bus driver early on, and I think that's the right way to do it, and I think that's what the expectation should be. For him not to carry the team. And people forget, like, through Aaron Rodgers' first year and a half starting, the Packers were 10-14, and then they really took off. So I would say, like, there's a really good team around Jordan Love there, and, he's lucky in that way. And early on, at least, the idea is that he's going to, be the bus driver of sorts and just try to keep the train on the tracks and And then the hope is that he grows into being more than that.
And then it's Packers at Bengals tonight on NFL Network at 7 Eastern time. Are we going to see Burrow on the sideline standing or not at all, seeing what is a boot? Or because that we'll get the idea of if it's been several weeks more from now or just it's been only a couple weeks since the several weeks as Zach Taylor went very cryptic on an update from Burrow. Are we going to just visually see Joe tonight, do you think? What's your 2 cents on that?
I'm not sure about that. I know that they've like kept him off his feet some. They kept him off his feet a lot early, and then it was I want to say it was 4 or 5 days he was back on his feet again. Mm-hmm. So like where they tried to keep him like a little bit more. Hey, let's be careful with this. Let's not tweak it. It was pretty quick that they were able to get him back up on his feet. He wasn't out of practice a ton. I know he'd like to be, but I know he was spending that time inside rehabbing. And he did that in order to not miss any meetings or any of the other team stuff that would go on when they weren't out on the practice field. So he could sort of, you know, do his work when the team was doing its work. My sense of it is there wasn't a huge level of concern that he was going to miss week one. Now, obviously, like, Jamar Chase's comments did get my attention like everybody else. I think the plan has been to be careful with him. And look, he's typically a fast healer, but this is a different thing than the ACL or the appendicitis. And generally, I know their feeling was with most other players, the sort of injury he suffered, this is a 4 to 6 week injury, which, you know, puts him close to the opener from when he hurt it. But if he is, you know, on his normal track where he does heal fast, there is a pretty good chance that would put him on track to start week one. So, again, it's like sort of like this tricky thing, but I know the Bengals want to err on the side of caution, and I know the other thing about it is he's proven he hasn't had a full offseason as a pro, which is mind blowing when you think about how advanced he is as a player. And while while that sucks, it also gives you something to lean on if you're the Bengals, where you can, you know, actually have evidence and say he doesn't really need the risking it until it's absolutely necessary to have him out there on the practice field.
Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk about the final game of the preseason weekend, something you can also see on NFL Network at 4 Eastern time, San Francisco at Las Vegas. How do you think we will see the quarterback situation for the 49ers play out this weekend, Albert?
I think Brock won't play. That'd be my guess. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're trying to be careful in ramping him back up. And they've been very deliberate about putting him in, I would say, intense situations. You know, they were taking him up step by step through the process when it comes to velocity and distance of throw and all of that. And my understanding is the plan was potentially to take the reins off fully this coming week. So the reins are still on to some degree. So that's why I think he won't play on Sunday. And then after that, I think the reins start to come off and you start to see more fully what, you know, they're planning to do with him. And they've got great confidence in him. You know, like I would say there's, and I'm doing a big story on this on Monday, but, you know, just being there the other day and talking to John and talking to Kyle about what they think of him. You know, Kyle actually said to me, like, you know, for the 7 full games that he played in last year, he played about as well as a quarterback could play for what we were asking him to do. And, you know, Kyle was very clear. He's our starter. You know, so they're planning on, you know, they're getting him ready for week one. They're getting him ready to be starter. At the same time, you and I both know that, you know, Kyle has Kyle's as open-minded as anybody when it comes to playing guys that might be in the lineup right now or considering other options. Like he doesn't tie himself to one thing. So certainly I think, you know, again, as we've talked about the whole offseason, there's that little narrow path there where, you know, maybe Sam Darnold or Trey Lance could create a situation for themselves where it's like, okay, like if Brock gets hurt for 2 or 3 weeks, Kyle will want to see them, and maybe the same scenario plays out that played out last year. I wouldn't completely rule that out, but they're really happy with Brock. While I think they said, you know, they've said to me, like, this has been Trey's best camp, and obviously, Sam, you can see the talent that made him the 3rd overall pick in the first place.
So, oh my gosh. So, Brock, yes, and then who, right? I mean,
yeah. and I think
what
it's
did
wide
you hear?
Open. I mean, that's my interpretation of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's. I don't think Trey's necessarily the number two, and you know, obviously, if he's not the number two, that opens up other questions as well.
It sure does. Like what? Go for it.
Like, I mean, if somebody's willing to give him a draft pick, do you do it? You know, and do the Niners, who really like Trey as a person, do they want to afford him the opportunity to get a fresh start somewhere else with the acknowledgement? With what they think of Brock Purdy, that the opportunity might not be there for him. You know, I mean, this is, as it is for all quarterbacks, year three is a big one, you know, because that's when the decision gets made on your fifth-year option. You become you become eligible for an extension afterwards and all of that. Like, big decisions are made on quarterbacks after year three. So, you know, like, if, you know, you're pretty resolute that Trey Lance isn't going to get the opportunity there, do you see if somebody's willing to flip a draft pick for him? And it might be tough to get a draft pick for him. And that's not that he can't play, but – I mean, the contract makes it a little difficult to trade him just because the next 2 years are guaranteed. And while it's not big money, he was the third overall pick in the draft. So it's not nothing either, you know? And so, like, that's something like that. I think it's one of those, like, you know, for the Niners, we'll cross that road when we get to a type of situations. But if Sam beats him out to be the backup, then, you know, it's certainly something they would consider.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. I can't wait to see this play out. There's no doubt. Plus, also, you know, you could trade Trey Lance if you can bring in Phillip Rivers as your third stringer, right, Albert? Like, what's up with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they got him on speed dial now. What? Right?
Yeah, just so. Give me the origins of this. When did they first reach out to Phillip that you know? And for damn sure, if they'd gotten out of Philadelphia alive, he would have been signed for the Super Bowl. I believe that would have happened 1,000,000%, Albert.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw what Jimmy said to our mutual friend Mike Silver. Did you see that?
Go for it.
So Jimmy said to Mike that he 100% would have been ready for the Super Bowl. So I guess then Philip probably would have been backing up Jimmy in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating situation. I mean, it was funny because I was with one of my buddies last night. We were talking about like, has there ever been a situation quite like this? And the closest thing I could come up with was Weddle, right? Like, where a veteran just joins a team.
Oh, yeah.
I think Weddle would be the closest thing. And Weddle wasn't just the Super – I mean, Weddle was the whole playoffs, you know? So there was at least some buildup to that. And, I mean, Phillip, obviously, is as football smart as they come. But the idea that a guy would just join a team, like, a couple weeks before the Super Bowl is really wild to think about.
Now, but how could Jimmy have been ready for the Super Bowl if he wasn't even ready for his own press conference in Las Vegas due to the foot, Albert? Well, and I know surgery happened, but come on. I mean, really? He would have been ready for playing the Super Bowl.
So that was the whole idea, though, Rich. Like, that was the thing. Like, so when they made the decision not to do the surgery in December, my understanding of it was, like, we want to keep the most doors open, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there were really two reasons why they put off. They said we're not doing the surgery now. And there was a chance he wasn't going to need the surgery at all, but they all knew it was a possibility.
Right.
The first thing was to leave open that possibility that he could come back and potentially play in a conference title game or a Super Bowl. So that was part of it. And then the second piece of it was Jimmy himself wanted to leave open the possibility that if he didn't need the surgery, that he could go to a new team, and then he'd have a full off-season program with that new team.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously they kept that hope alive all the way up until he signed with the Raiders. Then he goes and does the physical, and they're like, no, no, no. Like, we want you to have the surgery now.
Right.
Let's not mess around with this. But that was the idea. The idea was, all right, I want to leave open the possibility for myself that I'm going to go to a new team and I'm not going to need the surgery, and then I'm going to get a chance to assimilate over April and May and June and get all the work I need in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, like, obviously the Raiders made the decision that – and the Raiders doctors made the decision that that wasn't the right way to go. And so Jimmy was limited to kind of the mental work. And he did a lot of stuff with Davante Adams and everything else to get himself up to speed mentally. But that, you know, was the decision the Raiders made, that – he was better off having the surgery than getting the physical work in the spring.
Okay, in the few minutes I have left with you here, let's talk about the running backs. Jacobs obviously won't be playing in this weekend. He's not even signing his tender. And Dalvin Cook is putting out some videos of him looking really spry. And Zeke is still sitting at home. And Kareem Hunt left in Indianapolis now left two places where he kicked tires and didn't sign a contract, and Leonard Fournette sitting out there. You know, when is rubber going to meet the road? I mean, the NFL's coming, and I know these guys don't want to be in training camp. They might be waiting to see injuries. What do you got for me on this front?
I was going to say, Rich, it seems like some people like their some of the running backs and the edge rushers out there are executing the old Walter Jones plan. Do you remember that?
Yes, I hear you.
The Seahawks would franchise him every year, and then he would
exactly.
And he would say, "Okay, I'm not signing that until training camp's over."
Right, exactly. And even mentioned Jonathan Taylor, who leaves the team to rehab on his own. Like, what's that about?
Yeah,
Albert, come on.
Yeah, I think that shows you how ugly that situation's gotten. And obviously, I think, you know, what exacerbated that situation is obviously what happened right there at the franchise tag deadline. With all of the tagged guys, with Jacobs and Barkley and not so much Pollard, but Pollard was one of the guys who was tagged. I think it's going to be a little like the edge rusher situation where I believe Yannick Ngakoue was the first one to sign, and then after Ngakoue signs, you start to see things springing loose a little bit with, you know, guys like Justin Houston, and you see Clowney going and doing visits now. I think it's going to take one guy to jump, and I think part of the problem is, you know, these guys are used to making more money than they're being offered now, so they want to make sure they don't shortchange themselves. And, like, you know, guys like Cook and Zeke are used to making big money, you know, like eight figures a year. And a lot of times it's tough for veteran players to reckon with the idea of making a fraction of that. And so they want to keep the idea alive. Well, maybe somebody has an injury somewhere, something happens. And I think, you know, as the weeks pass, it winds up becoming a game of musical chairs. And I think that's what's playing out here, is once one of them signs, you'll start to see those dominoes fall. But it takes one for that to happen, and obviously that hasn't happened yet.
Okay. Zach Martin, Chris Jones, are they just going to have to eat it? Because it certainly seems like management's telling them to right now.
I think those are two separate situations, but I think in both cases, it's wild how much money those guys are giving up to make their point. I'm blown away. And I guess you can respect the principle. I think they're both over $1 million in fines now, which is crazy. I think Zach Martin, that eventually gets done with some sort of adjustment to his deal. Chris Jones is a little bit more difficult because it's a new deal. And the Chris Jones situation, there's a very specific problem here. There's an Aaron Donald problem, okay? And on one end, you have what Aaron Donald got when he was leveraging retirement against the Rams, which was a complete outlier of a contract, right? Way above what any defensive tackle had gotten. And then you have, like, where the rest of the market is. And you see what, you know, what Jeffrey Simmons got from the Titans and what Quinn and Williams got from the Jets. And so basically where the divide there is, you got the Chiefs willing to pay him at that market rate. Like, we'll give you a bump over what Quinn and Williams and Jeff Simmons got, right? And he's like, no, I'm like Aaron Donald, I'm over here. And because he's already gotten a second contract, he's got the financial wherewithal to say, I'm willing to sit out to make you do it. And that, because of that, that's become a little bit of a staring contest. So a little bit like, a lot of the listeners won't remember this, but, you know, almost 10 years ago now, like, the Calvin Johnson contract was a complete outlier at receiver, and it wound up making negotiations for players like Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas really, really difficult. I think we're in the same sort of situation with Chris Jones right now. And, you know, I don't know what's going to give, but it's hard to doubt the resolve of a man who's willing to walk away from seven figures to make his point.
Albert, greatly appreciate the time. Greatly drive safe, and we'll chat again soon. Thanks, brother.
Awesome. Thanks, Rich. I appreciate it.
Must follow at Albert Breer on Twitter. Go check him out right there. Jonathan Taylor shows you how ugly it is. Hey, first Monday night of the season, 1 month from today. This stuff's going to have to get answered soon. Like, this whole business of us talking about it, not getting answers, is about to be over. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. That's next. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Yeah. It's time for kickoff, and the Believe podcast will get you ready for the new season.
How do you live through this as a Detroit sports fan?
Believe has podcasts covering all 32 professional teams and many of your favorite college teams, too.
You solidified your defense. You got better.
Sideline to sideline, end zone to end zone.
If you don't do those things, then you're not even trying your hardest to win at football, and I don't know what we're doing.
There was a lot of great players on those teams that I was fortunate to be part of.
Search BLEAV podcasts wherever you listen.
We're here in Kansas City in support of the Big Slick Charity Weekend.
Thank you for doing this. This is amazing that you brought your whole show here. Whole show is here in Kansas City in support of Big Slick.
I want to describe for the radio audience, or would you care to, Jake Tapper, what is on your feet?
Eagles Super Bowl commemorative sneakers with big screaming eagles. I'm not really sure what the texture of the material is.
Okay.
I have a more subtle reference to my team. This is the silver of the silver and black Oakland Raiders.
Gene Lamont, longtime baseball man.
Sweet, sweet, sweet Gene Lamont made the sorry mistake of standing in front of us. The name Lamont is so fun to scream. Hey, Lamont! See? It just rolls. And you go, this is Bush League, Lamont! When he used to come out, we used to sing like the Death Star march, like the Darth Vader. We'd go, Gene Lamont, Gene Lamont. Oh, Gene Lamont, Gene Lamont, Gene Lamont.
I know how seriously you take your Kansas City food.
Yeah.
He's sending me videos all the time, different stuff to try, and
The text exchange between me and him and some of his other offensive linemen is hilarious. Like, I texted Mitchell Schwartz in the middle of the night about a brisket. Like, what
and
is
I
going
responded.
On?
And he responded. For whatever reason, I was up at that exact time.
Weirdly, athletes like Pitch Perfect a lot.
I'm not kidding.
I know Bill Belichick knows all the songs. He's always singing songs. Yeah.
Now, Brett, when you saw that we had the 2015 World Series trophy.
I'm a big fan of that one, but.
I know.
Where's that other one that the old guy.
The 1985 one. We will replace the 2015 one. With the 1985 one.
Oh, look at this.
Oh, look at that.
Just for you.
Just the best.
My dad had some tickets to Game 7, but had given them away. So I didn't get to go to Game 7, and instead I had to work at a grocery store. I'd come up, I'd say, what happened? He goes, Daryl Motley just hit a home run. Go rearrange the milk.
Fun stuff. We got to go back with the show. That's a life goal. Okay, back here on the Rich Eisen Show, along with our Roku channel stream. Terzo and I will all rise. Let's take his phone call, as always, here on a Friday. What's up, Terzo?
Hey, what's up, Rich? Hey, guys. Rich, first, I want to get to Phil Mickelson here in a second because I got a funny story for you. But I want to go back to you kind of ripping out my heart talking about that NFC Championship game. If they would have just called or threw the challenge flag when Devontae Smith did not catch that ball.
Yeah.
I believe that game would have played out completely different because I don't think Purdy would have been in that situation to get his arm hurt.
How about that? You're really digging deep. I do remember that. I was mystified why there was no challenge call. I mean, you just don't want to use one so early on in a game, but that struck me as a turnover on downs or not. Let's roll. And that was a big moment. Big moment. I agree with you. What do you got for me on the Phil front? What do you think?
All right, so I'm kind of like Brockman. I like to place a couple bets here and there. But in law school, studying for the bar, just grinding. And I'm about ready to break, and I'm sitting there with my buddy Rob, and I go up to the whiteboard, and I write out all 14 MLB games for the day. I place $100 on each of the games over-under. Just to get my mind off of studying for the bar, one of the goofiest moments I ever had, went 9-5, which was nice. So it kind of changed my mind, but to think of the amount of money that Phil was going with, it is insane, and it just gives me anxiety because it makes me think of Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. That movie was just so intense. It just has to be that feeling for him.
Well, I appreciate the call, Terzo. Didn't you say before the show, Chris, that somebody who had Phil's annual revenue of $60 million maybe for playing golf and everything,
endorsements,
everything, that this would be the equivalent of somebody making $100,000 betting what?
$150 per bet.
All right.
So not outrageous, but enough to make you nervous.
Well, I guess, you know, would Terzo have bet on himself to, like, if somebody took a wager on him passing the bar?
Or like during a case?
Winning a case?
Yeah. Kind of what that's
again.
Sort of
Phil
like.
Tweeted out yesterday, you know, in response to everything going on with the Billy Walters book, saying that I never bet on the Ryder Cup. even though Walter said he was going to, but got talked out by Walters in doing so. While it's well known that I always enjoy a friendly wager on the course, I would never undermine the integrity of the game. I've also been very open about my gambling addiction. I have previously conveyed my remorse, took responsibility, have gotten help, have been fully committed to therapy that has positively impacted me, and I feel good about where I am now. It's good for him. Obviously, right. Hey, that's his life. It's his bank account. It's his life. It's whatever, you know. But, you know, clearly you can lose your head in the heat of the moment. Like, say, hit a ball while it's still moving because you can't make a putt in the U.S. Open. You know, honestly, you know, like you can.
Yep, that happened. Also, Phil talks about gotten help. It's under control.
No, I know that.
The video came out 3 days ago of him talking to DeChambeau about like 5 Gs on a practice round.
But if he can afford it, I guess to salud, and that's what people are saying. So what's the big deal if you bet on yourself? I don't know. I just think to myself, like, you play in the Ryder Cup because it's a privilege and you're doing it for your country. And that's, if that's not enough of a toast of an action, you got to make money off of it?
Also reportedly, that's why, $400,000.
That's why I called it an illness. And in terms of, you know, his, I guess his colleagues, his fellow players, like if they have any sympathy or whatever from, let's check on what Rory McIlroy has to think about this story. Rory?
The talk of the golf world is this book excerpt that came out about Phil Mickelson. I'm curious what the reaction in there was when you read about it.
I mean, at least he can bet on the Ryder Cup this year because he won't be a part of it, so.
Rory locked and loaded.
Top
on that
rope,
one.
Rory. Top rope, Rory.
Richard the King Petty.
That's at the top.
That's Richard the King Petty right there. Yeah,
so good.
Does Rory hate the Live Tour? Yes or no? Should we put that on our Twitter account for a poll question?
Ding ding ding.
Does he hate Phil and the Live Tour? Damn.
Yo.
But that is an A+ comment. Well done. Jake Tapper coming up next on the Rich Eisen Show. But yeah, man, whoa, huh?
Hey.
But honestly, you're hearing the conversation of like, what does it matter? I saw, you know, responses to my opinion on it, which is it's an illness. And if he wants to deal with it or not in the manner that he says he has dealt with it, that he's in a good place, you know what? You could also say he's probably in a good place because the Saudis dug him out of a hole financially. Unless he didn't have to. You're saying he made all this money that he was betting? How much money did he lose? $100 million? Right? He bet a billion and lost $100 million?
Yeah.
So does, you know.
You're in the hole. I mean, you're losing.
Could you imagine, though, just like betting that much money on stuff?
That's nuts. No.
And then you keep on chasing it, right?
Yep. I mean, that's what it is. Oh, I'm going to get it back. I'm going to get it back.
And then you bet more, and you bet more, and you bet more.
You have a bad Sunday. Yeah, we got a Monday night game.
The whole thing is, then you start doing things that you might not ordinarily do to keep chasing it.
That was a whole Sopranos episode.
I know. I just saw that the other day. As you know, I'm watching the final season of the Sopranos right now.
The whole episode.
You know, he goes up to Carm, his wife, and asks her to use the proceeds of the house that she finally sold to bet on the Jets against the Chargers because it was a sure thing. You get crazy, things are happening.
Yeah.
Just don't ask Rory. Phil.
The bridge loan?
Whoa.
Rory Petty?
Yeah. Rory Petty. Well done. Rory.
For over 3 decades, nobody has had a wrestling career like Arn Anderson. Conrad Thompson gets all the stories with Arn.
After watching AEW's Double or Nothing, Amy wants to know, what does dinosaur taste like?
It ain't chicken. It's like biting into a sinewy charcoal briquette.
Ah.
But chewy.
Oh, like wow, that's disgusting.
Yeah, sure is.
Check out Arn every week, wherever you listen.